Thanks, Debbie. Hi, everybody. So my task today is to give you a broad overview of how the Affordable Care Act affects women and children, which it does in lots and lots of ways. So I'll try to kind of give you a little bit of an insight into what's going on there, and also point out a couple of things that I think is really important for us as advocates for women and children to sort of keep an eye on as implementation evolves. Oh, here's my disclosures. No disclosures. Okay. So I wanted to start by looking at coverage expansions and the different options that are available to cover women and children, and then talk a little bit about what benefits are actually included in that new coverage that people can get, and I'll spend some time throughout pointing out those issues to watch. So coverage expansions. This is usually the first thing that people think about when they think about the Affordable Care Act. So there's a mandate to purchase insurance, and there's also expanded ways for people to get that insurance coverage. So one of those ways is that the Affordable Care Act expands eligibility for Medicaid. Everyone below 138% of the federal poverty level is eligible for Medicaid coverage if the state elects to take up that option. And then the second expansion is through the health insurance marketplaces, which were really created to help make comparison shopping easier for consumers. They're going to select a private health plan from a set of plans that are offered, and hopefully those websites provide sort of an apples-to-apples comparison so people can pick what it is that they want. And depending on income level, people will also qualify for a tax credit to help make that insurance more affordable. So here's a map of what the Medicaid expansion currently looks like. In the states that are shown in green, those are states that have taken up the Medicaid expansion. So in those states, every person below 138% of poverty is eligible for Medicaid. There are also some states in dark blue, and those are expanding Medicaid, but not in your typical traditional way. For example, Arkansas is using some Medicaid funds to help people buy private insurance. So they're getting coverage, but they're not getting Medicaid in the way you would normally think about it. The light blue state, Indiana, is trying to get something like that through right now. We're not sure how it's going to pan out. The other important thing about the Medicaid expansion is that the federal government really wants states to take up this option. So if you know how Medicaid is funded, the federal government pays a portion and the states pay a portion. And for states that will take up that expansion, the federal government will pay 90%. So they're paying a ton of the cost of that care as sort of an enticement. So you can see about half the states have taken up this expansion, the other half haven't yet. Medicaid was first enacted in 1965. It took 20 years for each state to join, for every state to join the program. Arizona was the last one to come on board. And so, you know, scholars who study this sort of thing are very hopeful that over time more and more states will take up this option. So just a little bit about why this really matters for women and children. Medicaid historically has been a huge insurance provider for pregnant women, for mothers, and for kids. And we know that if all the states took up the Medicaid expansion, another 7 million women would be eligible for coverage. Clearly, it's important. There have been studies looking at health outcomes for people who have insurance versus not have insurance. And low-income women are less likely to access care than, even though they have higher health care needs. So if we can get people covered, there's definitely improvement in health and in self-reported health status. Kids also rely on Medicaid. Over 32 million children have Medicaid as their source of coverage. And the other thing, I guess, that I want to point out about Medicaid and why it's important for maternal and child health populations is that it's just so big. Compared to, like, Title V funding or some of the other categorical funding streams that come in, Medicaid is huge. They spent $414 billion on Medicaid services a few years ago, so way bigger than WIC and Title V and all of those other programs. So then here's a map of the state's decisions about running their health insurance marketplaces. These were created by the Affordable Care Act. They became operational on January 1st of 2014. And actually, the open enrollment period for the next year's marketplace plans is just started this weekend. So people are signing up again, or some people signing up for the first time. So the way the marketplaces works is the states could pick three different options. The state could either run the marketplace themselves, or they could ask the federal government to do it, or they could do sort of a partnership. And so on here, it's the green states are running their own marketplace. The federal government is running the sort of magenta ones. And the bluish ones are partnership states. Usually this is sort of opaque to consumers. They don't necessarily know who is running the marketplace, but it might be important for people who advocate for consumers to know kind of who's in charge, who's making the decisions. If I wanted to talk to somebody about that, who would it be? So that's why it's important to keep track of who's running the marketplace in the different states. So major benefits of the marketplaces that also benefit women, children, and families. The first one is the tax credit. So consumers who purchase plans through this marketplace who have a family income between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level are eligible for a tax credit that makes that insurance, that monthly premium that they pay, much more affordable. And the second reason is that the health plans that are sold on those marketplaces have a lot of consumer protections, things what they have to cover, and just making it a more robust plan, I guess, for families. So here's kind of what it looks like. This is as of May 1st of this year. 20 million Americans had gained health insurance coverage due to the expansions in the Affordable Care Act. And that includes 6 million people who gained coverage through Medicaid or CHIP and 8 million in the marketplaces. I couldn't find any data yet on how that breaks down by gender. I think that's still to be determined, but there's some estimates that I wanted to show you on this next slide. So this chart shows the breakdown of sources of health insurance coverage for women of childbearing age. So if you're looking at the big round, the pie chart, the light blue is 65% of women who get health insurance through an employer, a spouse's employer, or another private source. And the dark blue slice is 13% of women get coverage through Medicaid. Then that orange slice is 19% of women who were uninsured in 2012. So you take that orange slice, and then it breaks it out on the bar chart that's on the right-hand side. It shows how the Affordable Care Act will affect these women. So of that uninsured slice, 40% of those women will be eligible for the tax credit subsidies when they purchase a marketplace plan, and 29% will be eligible for Medicaid. So these coverage expansions are really going to be huge for women. Looking at sources of coverage for kids, about half of the kids are covered by employer-sponsored insurance plans. Another third get coverage through Medicaid and CHIP, so those are hugely important programs for children. Because of the way Medicaid and CHIP eligibility is structured, more children were eligible than adults, and so that leaves the marketplaces being a less important source of coverage for children than for adults, but still they are estimating that 500,000 children will get coverage through a subsidized marketplace plan. Okay, so this is a fun one because this changed last week after I already made these slides. So one of the issues I wanted to point out was coverage for pregnant women. So there's new coverage options for pregnant women created by the Affordable Care Act, but by doing that, it also got really complicated. And it kind of looks like some women might be eligible for multiple coverage options at the same time. So guidance came out from CMS just last week trying to clarify how this is going to work. So I'm going to do my best here, but this is brand new stuff. So historically, states offer Medicaid coverage to pregnant women at a higher income level than non-pregnant women. So if you compare the orange bar with the orange bar is pregnancy-related coverage and the red bar is regular Medicaid expansion. So some states also offer pregnant women coverage through CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, by technically having that coverage apply to the unborn child. So that's what you get in the blue bar. And now we have the marketplace plans available in the purple bar. Okay, so which of these coverage options applies if you're a pregnant woman at one of these levels of income? So CMS and the IRS released some clarifications last week. So for Medicaid, the idea, they said that if you're enrolled in a pregnancy-related Medicaid plan, so at a higher income level, the states can do that two different ways. Either they can say, okay, you're eligible as a result of being pregnant, you get the full Medicaid package. If that happens, you're good. You've got, you're meeting the mandate requirements to have insurance and everything's covered. But states can also choose to say, okay, you're eligible because you're pregnant at this income level, but we're only going to cover your pregnancy-related services, not everything else you might need. So then is that really like full health insurance? Does that meet the mandate? So the answer in the new guidance is it depends. And the secretary is going to look at exactly what the state covers under that pregnancy-related option and decide whether it's good enough, basically. Is it a robust enough plan to count as insurance? If it isn't, there's no provision there to actually beef up the coverage. The provision that they put into the new rule is to say, well, okay, but we're not going to make you pay the penalty. Like, we're not saying that it's actually good enough coverage, but we're going to give you a hardship exemption, so at least you don't have to pay that penalty. Now, here's the other twist on the Medicaid pregnancy coverage. If a woman is enrolled in a marketplace plan and she gets pregnant, she can then, and she's at an income level where she would qualify for Medicaid if she's pregnant. She can now choose, either I stay in my marketplace plan, I keep my doctor and I keep everything the same, or I can switch into Medicaid for the duration of my pregnancy. So that might be a better option financially for me, but who knows if I'm going to have the same doctor and the same networks, and then after I give birth, I have to switch back into the marketplace plan that I have. So we're getting a little clarity about how it's going to work on paper, but still a lot of confusion about how this is going to work in real life. Okay, so I'm going to rush through some of the benefits provisions. Coverage, obviously awesome, but really only awesome if it covers the things that you need. So we've got 10 essential health benefits that are listed on this slide. These are the things that have to be covered by those marketplace plans and for Medicaid expansion populations. A couple of note for MCH populations, maternity and newborn care is in there. There's some prevention and wellness things that I'll talk about, and habilitative services, really important for kids with special health care needs. I think we'll learn about some more later. So here are the specific preventive services listed for women. Insurance plans have to cover these. They can't charge a copayment. They can't charge coinsurance. They can't charge a deductible. A lot has been made out of the free birth control that's on there. Obamacare birth control is on there. Other testing, screening services, well, women visits. Benefits for kids also have been specified. They're following some Bright Futures recommendations that the American Academy of Pediatrics has on their website. There's a whole schedule and specific recommendations for each year of a child's life to make sure that they get the screening and the well child treatment that they need. One interesting one to watch is pediatric dental. So it's kind of a small, but it's really important part of the essential health benefits. Dental plans, if you have one, you know it's probably separate from your medical plan. They're not really related at all. And dental plans are sold on the marketplaces. But they're sold in three different ways. You can either put them embedded with a medical plan, so it's part of the medical plan that someone buys. You could bundle it up, kind of like your cable and your phone bill thing, or you can sell it as a standalone dental plan. And basically, this just adds, I mean, it means that there's coverage there for parents to buy for their kids, but they don't have to buy that standalone dental plan if there's not dental in with their medical coverage. And so they might not know that that's available. Also, the way that subsidy is calculated doesn't take into account the extra cost that a family might have to pay for that standalone dental plan. So it's a thing to keep an eye on, because while it's important that it's there, we need to make sure it can really be utilized. 2 minutes. Couple other issues to watch that I just want to point out, since we're all wanting to make sure that women and kids get the coverage they need. Churn and continuity. So basically, your health insurance coverage isn't going to be static. It changes when we change jobs, when we move across state lines, when we hit certain age groups, and families with low incomes are even more likely to churn sources of coverage. So this slide just kind of lays out how some of the benefits, cost sharing, and provider networks can be different between Medicaid, CHIP, and the Marketplace plans. So it's really important that social service providers try to help coordinate as much as possible and make sure that people aren't losing out on services that they need when they're switching across sources of coverage. Last one is the future of CHIP. So I didn't really talk very much about the Children's Health Insurance Program because the ACA kind of mostly left it alone. But there's a couple of things to point out. So CHIP covers 8 million kids right now up to age 19 and also pregnant women in some states. And because of things that happened with the ACA, there were some shifts of children into CHIP and there were some shifts of children out of CHIP. So because we raised the income level for Medicaid, there were some kids who had CHIP coverage who shifted into Medicaid coverage. Might be a richer benefit package, might be a smaller provider network. That's kind of your pro-con on that one. There's also a shift of people into CHIP. So it's been an option for a while for states to allow state employees to put their kids into CHIP plans. But it hadn't had a lot of take-up, and then when the ACA kind of shook everything up, more states looked at that again and took up that option. So state employee children might be moving into the CHIP plan. We don't know what's going to happen with CHIP. It's only authorized through 2019 and funded through 2015. So if CHIP goes away, these kids will have to move to some other source of coverage, and we really need to figure out what that's going to be. So that's my conclusion. Health policy is not static. Keep watching. Thank you.
Great.